Episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. I am your host, Dalton Miller, joined as always by my co-host, Corey Kinnon. And we have a fun one for you guys today because we are going to nerd out on about 10 to 12 day three players from the 2025 NFL draft that we believe can be day one contributors. This is the nerdy stuff. This is the fun stuff. This is why we do this. We don't do this to talk about the top. We talk about the top guys because the top guys get the listens and the watches and all that stuff, and we got to do that. But we love the day three love, and we got it here for you guys today. But first, I got to ask, Corey, how are you doing today, brother?
I'm great. I'm great, man. You know, yesterday was my birthday, so I had a little day off. I took the day off work, and you know, I went to the gym, and I just hung out for most of the day. My daughter did have a doctor's appointment, which took a chunk of my time off, but that's all good. I got to choose takeout food last night, so, you know, it's good.
What'd you get?
Indian food. I went with Indian food.
Oh, dude, I love Indian.
I can never go wrong with Indian food.
Yeah, no. So but you're not a spicy curry food guy, so...
No, but I tend to go, like, a more mild spice level on it, but...
I'm taking some of the fun out of the Indian, but... A little bit. No, that's fantastic. I'm glad that you had a good day. My food challenge was ruined because the restaurant was closed the two prior days.
Oh, no.
And nobody got my reservation with the note that I was doing the El Kilo challenge. And so they were unable to, because they have to pre-order it, the burger and the bun a day ahead. So I'm going next Thursday to cheat on my diet for the first time since January. So that will be a very fun time. But anyways, let's get into these day three picks because we have a ton of them. And we might as well just start off in round four and work our way down. Yeah. And we are going to start off very early in round four here with the Jacksonville Jaguars. We both believe Bashaul Tutten could have a big role in that offense. Second pick in the fourth round. He was one of my favorite players in this draft class. He was probably outside of Ashton Jeanty, in my opinion, the most elusive, most explosive in a phone booth back. He might have been a little bit more naturally make you miss, and a little bit less contact balance, or I would say significantly less contact balance, because Ashton Jeanty's built like a freaking rock. But Tutten had one of the best missed tackle rates and broken tackle rates. And he's been playing with a banged up knee for 2 years now. And so to have that explosiveness with that knee, like hopefully it's not something that lasts long term, because he is an absolute monster. Hopefully it's not degenerative, but yeah. Even with the big knee brace on, he was making dudes miss, and he has the full repertoire to be a danger in that offense. Because it doesn't seem like they love Travis Etienne there. And Tank Bigsby is a decent back, but he doesn't bring that same kind of juice that Tutten does.
Yeah, I would be shocked if Travis Etienne is on that roster by week one, to be completely honest with you. Like, everything out of Jacksonville is they just don't like him, this new regime. And it's another thing you got to consider. It's a new regime. So we're talking a new regime, and then we're talking just Travis Etienne and Tank Bigsby and D'Ernest Johnson. I think I don't even know if they re-signed D'Ernest Johnson, to be honest. But
no, but they did draft LaQuint Allen in round seven. But I think everybody kind of knows how I feel about him.
Yeah, and I like LaQuint Allen on passing downs because I think he catches the ball well, and I think he throws his weight around in pass pro well. But that's not going to prohibit Bashaul Tutten from getting the carries that Bashaul Tutten is in line to get, in our opinion here. So obviously, the Jaguars didn't pick a running back early. They didn't sign one in free agency, and this is the real first running back that this new regime has handpicked for Liam Cohen, that Liam Cohen has handpicked for his offense. So I think that's pretty high praise to begin with, like a reason to buy in to begin with, is just saying, you know, Liam Cohen that obviously doesn't like what's going on with Etienne. And maybe they really do like Tank Bigsby, and Tank Bigsby's the back to buy into here, but Even then, I still think Travis Etienne is probably getting moved before week one. So
yeah, and look what Cone and them did with mm-hmm. with what they had in Tampa Bay with mid round picks. They can get it done. They can get it done. And not only can they get it done with those guys, they have been able to really kind of find the talented spots on day three and, you know, late on day two to pick those backs up. So I am very excited about that potential there. We're moving coasts now. We're staying near the water. We're going to San Francisco here. And even though the 49ers drafted Alfred Collins in round two, we're looking at Jordan Elliott and Kevin Givens as the two starting defensive tackles in San Francisco right now. I believe CJ West is going to get significant snaps because I think that he is better than where his draft position was. Mm-hmm. And I think that even though he played a lot of one tech at Indiana, we saw what he is capable of when he is given a green light. And I think that as a three tech who can also defend against the run, I mean, you're looking at a very potent duo with him and Alfred Collins.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you look at the pass rush upside that West has that Collins doesn't necessarily have. Obviously Collins is a
like ready. I swear to God, he has it. Because you see him run defend and you see him as an athlete, like, I swear to God, he has to have it in there somewhere. He's just terrible at it. It doesn't make sense to me how his hands could be so good against the run and he just has no pass rush thoughts in his brain. So, the athletic potential is there and the length and the strength is there to be a menace against the pass. He just sucks at it and it's really weird.
Yeah. It is bizarre. So I do think that we're going to see this team was starting Jordan Elliott last year, defensive tackle. That wasn't a rotational player for them. So that tells you the amount of overhaul that had to go into this defensive tackle room. And then obviously Malik Collins signed in Cleveland this offseason as well. So there's a lot that needs to happen. And so that just means more snaps for CJ West, who I'm honestly shocked after his pre-draft cycle went to the Shrine Bowl, dominated. Tested out of the charts at the combine. I'm really shocked he made it out of the top 100. The top 103 is where day three ends. I'm shocked that he made it out of day two or day two. Yeah. But you know, more for San Fran there. More for San Fran. I'm gonna bring up a second defensive tackle here. Or are we still in round four? I don't want to jump ahead.
Yeah, no, you're not jumping ahead. You are absolutely not jumping ahead right now. We are going in the order that I have set here, brother. And we're going with Malachi Moore, the New York Jets. And we can kind of bring this one up quickly. Tony Adams and Andreas Cisco are the two guys there at safety. I think that Malachi Moore can come in and bring snaps as an overhang type of guy, as a more of a true strong safety in that Wilkes defense. So I think that he's somebody who can come in and play downhill at a pretty high level. And it's funny, too, because they have Jamie and Sherwood playing linebacker for them. And Sherwood was a former safety in college. And I don't think that Malachi Moore will ever be a true linebacker, but he brings that same sort of versatility coming down here and smacking dudes in the mouth. So shout out to him.
Yeah. And again, this goes back to the reason to buy in with Tootin and Jaguars is that Tootin was drafted by a very good offensive mind, almost handpicked by an offensive mind. The Jets are headed into a new regime as well, led by a former all-pro cornerback, all-pro defensive back. And so if you are a team drafting a defensive back in the year one of a regime where your new head coach is an all-pro defensive back, there's reason for me to think that there's a connection there as well. And so this might be an Aaron Glenn guy, the guy that Aaron Glenn says, you draft me up this guy on day three, I'll find a way to get him on the field and I'll find a way to make this work. So I do think the Malachi Moore with Aaron Glenn fit there is something to probably keep an eye on too.
100%. Was Cam Jackson the next guy on your list?
No, Jordan Phillips was.
Jordan Phillips was. Okay. Yeah. Let's go to Jordan Phillips in Miami because he is actually next up on the list.
Yeah, so with Jordan Phillips, again, another player I was really bullish on, one of my day three my guys heading into this year's draft, defensive tackle out of Maryland. Again, only 20 years old.
He wasn't a day three guy for you, though, was he?
I thought he was a day two guy, yeah. I thought he was a third-round player. So, again, just because he's 20 and he possesses physical traits that are rare, in my opinion. Again, more of a stout build. So what, 31-inch arms, but ultra explosive. So that means he's getting into your chest right away and he's not getting out. And that's on tape. Again, I think there's room to develop the cognitive side of his game. When he is two gapping, when he is trying to redirect the run game, things like that. But when you're looking at the Miami defensive tackle room, who also just drafted Kenneth Grant in the first round, their starting nose tackle on their depth chart is still currently Benito Jones. So, and if you think about something that Jordan Phillips brings day one potential for, it is that ability to take on bodies and not get dug out. So I think there's potential here that Jordan Phillips could come in as a one tech, as a shade, and just be that dude to eat up space for Miami while he tries to figure out some other stuff. I don't know if he will ever figure out pass rush upside because he is pretty stiff. But what I do know is that he brings a really high floor as a run defender. And if you're being drafted in the fifth round and you can come on the field for a first, second down, obvious or like not obvious passing situations and do your job, you're going to play in the NFL for a long time. And so I think that's something that Jordan Phillips could even do as a rookie in Miami.
Yeah, I mean, I really struggle with it because I think that there's a lot more cognitively that we undersell when it comes to being able to just be a gap plugger. But from a physical perspective, he has all of the upside to be that guy. I just think that the mental trigger has to be there or else you're going to get washed out because you are playing athletes who are as good as you at this point at the NFL level. When you look at it, just to bring up Mozzie Smith is longer, stronger, more explosive than Jordan Phillips is. And he still was horrific because he didn't know what he was doing out there. And that's it. Like, if you don't have the cognitive ability and the confidence in what you are seeing in front of you, you're going to get your ass kicked. And that's what we saw with Mozzie, and that's very much what we could see with Jordan Phillips. And hopefully we don't, because I think that he does have a ton of potential. He's somebody who I liked as a day three guy who you could develop, especially because he is 20. I wish he would have stayed in school and we would have gotten to see a lot more of him and he would have been able to see a lot more of the field. But I see the vision with him, absolutely.
I do wonder if he regrets declaring a little bit.
Yeah, it was just a little bit of a weird pick. The next two are going to be running backs here. I wanted to throw Mac McWilliams out there, but you know, there's a lot going on there with the Philadelphia defense, so we didn't do that. Braden Swinson was a name that we brought up as well that we didn't choose. But Jordan James, just because I don't know who's getting snaps behind Christian McCaffrey in that backfield. And there won't be many snaps to be given, but I do think in that Shanahan offense, Jordan James is just a perfect one-to-one match. And I know that Corey wasn't very high on Jordan James, but I think when you look at the fit offensively, it's a perfect marriage. And it's the first like good marriage from a back that we have seen Shanahan pick in a while, because for a long time, he was picking dudes and they were going off. And then he started picking like heavy footed dudes and like trying to like change his ways a little bit. And it just didn't work out very well.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that I'm not very high on Jordan James, and I kind of do feel like he kind of also feels like a Tyrion Davis Price / Trey Sermon kind of pick to me, where it's like, oh yeah, Shanahan drafted this running back, he's going to be awesome. And then they never see the field. I'm not going to undersell Jordan James before he ever takes a snap. But
well, his feet are way better than both of them, too. And that matters.
Yeah. But again, it could be a numbers game. Like, who's playing behind Christian McCaffrey, as you said. So won't sell him short there at all. Next running back here that we're talking about is in Dallas, who Dallas has been searching for a running back for, 2 years now, at least. And we're talking about a team that, like, Jerry Jones might have cost them Jonathan Brooks last year by saying, like, oh, yeah, we love this guy, before they didn't draft him yet. But, I mean, Jonathan Brooks has also now suffered a second torn ACL. So maybe they dodged a little bit of a bullet there, but they did land Jaden Blue here midday three.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that he has day one impact because he brings something that Javonte Williams doesn't bring. And that's an ability to be a playmaker out of the backfield as a receiver.
Yeah. And probably the best receiving back in the class, or at least the most explosive receiving back in the class. And quite honestly, the most explosive back in the class. So he's somebody who we know the Cowboys like to use their backs in the passing game. The screen game is something that, you know, maybe with this offense a little bit less, but that's something that they really try to utilize a lot with Ezekiel Elliott early on when he still had a little bit of juice. And it's something that Dak Prescott, a very good, very knowledgeable quarterback overall, knows where his leaks are, knows where his outlet is, and he will use that to his full advantage. And you have Jadon Blue, who has the ability to make guys miss, has the ability to absolutely delete angles on the edge. And I liked what they did when they brought in Williams and Sanders, just kind of throwing very, very inexpensive assets at guys who were highly drafted, talented players. And I think that Williams is going to be that number one back in this, this room. But I do think Blue is something that they've been searching for as a change of pace, that back as an RB2.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Where do you want to head off next year?
Yeah, Torrey Horton. Torrey Horton is where we're going next. Seattle bled two wide receivers this offseason. And Torrey Horton, to me, I thought he was going to be a day two player before the year started. I mean, when you looked at like mock draft simulators and things like that, he was in the 50s to like the 80s, I believe, early on. But he only played three or four games this year and then got completely forgotten about throughout the entire draft cycle. I didn't hear anybody talking about him whatsoever, even though when we did our superlatives before the year, he was my ball hog. He was my target magnet because he had games where he was getting 15, 20 targets in games, catching balls for Colorado State. I mean, that's the type of receiver that he is. And I think that in this offense, Cooper Kupp is there. JSN is the dude there. But Marcus Valdes-Scantling and Cooper Kupp, you can't count on his health. Jake Bobo has come in and brought snaps. But I think Torrey Horton is somebody who you can have as a legitimate wide receiver three in an offense who is going to snatch you 40 to 60 passes and move the chains at a pretty high rate.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you think he walks into this room as wide receiver three? I think they'll probably lean on Jake Bobo a lot early on.
Well, not just Bobo, but I think MVS too, just because MVS brings something to that room that nobody else in
right,
that room
that versatile threat. And he has familiarity with Clint Kubiak.
Yeah.
But we're talking about, I mean, that's a very niche role. I'm thinking like they had, I guess DK wasn't the overly developed wide receiver, but like DK was obviously the top dog in that room because he could do a couple things really, really well. But like Torrey Horton might be the third best receiver on this depth chart, or like in terms of overall skill set. Again, I think they'll lean on Jake Bobo a little more this year, but Torrey Horton might be that wide receiver through in this roster by week six.
Yeah. Yeah, he very well might be.
Yeah. It's not a very good
kind of why I put him on there.
Yeah, outside of Kupp and Smith and Jigba there. Yeah, for sure.
Let's talk about another fun weapon here, though, okay?
Ooh, I love this.
After missing out on their guy from Michigan, they went out and got the watered-down version of him in Aronde Gadsden from Syracuse. Will Dissly is the starter there, obviously, in Los Angeles. They brought in Tyler Conklin, but Aronde Gadsden brings them the ability. And listen, the wide receiver room is actually looking half decent now.
Yeah.
Kind of. Ladd McConkey is a dude. We know this. And Trey Harris, I believe, is a dude. Quentin Johnston, much improved. And then Mike Williams is 75 years old and can't stay healthy. But we know that Harbaugh wants to run the football. And Aronde Gadsden is a legitimate tight end who can also split out and be a legitimate wide receiver, because he has in the past. He was a wide receiver when he came in to Syracuse. He added weight at a steady rate. Dad was a pro. He knows what he's doing. He's a legitimate player, man. And I really do believe he is going to get significant snaps in this offense in 12 personnel, spreading him out, bringing him in, playing F. Like, mm-hmm. He's going to do a lot of fun things in this offense, I think, by the time the year is over.
This is one of my favorite fits of any player, any round, is the Chargers with Aronde Gadsden right here. They're going to find ways to get him isolated. They're going to find ways to get him down the field. Again, watching Kyle McCord felt like Aronde Gadsden was doming at least one guy a game, just mm-hmm. like over top of one guy a game. So, I absolutely love Gadsden to the Chargers right there.
Yeah, and I feel like I've been taking over a lot of this, unfortunately, and I apologize for that. No, I'm going to let you talk about it. Chris Paul here, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's stay in Los Angeles here for a little bit, and let's go to Chris Paul here with the Rams, out of Ole Miss, drafted on day 3. Again, undersized. I guess he wants to go by Poo Paul. We'll call him Poo Paul. That's fine.
That's bold. That's bold.
It is very bold. This linebacker room in Los Angeles. Omar Spates, who played well for them. Troy Reader, Nate Landman, Poo Paul. This very much has an Ernest Jones drafted on day 3, starts day 1, plays for 4 years kind of feel to it here with the Rams in this linebacker room. And again, Poo Paul is probably the best athlete out of all of those guys I just mentioned as well. So, yeah, I don't see how you look at Troy Reader or Nate Landman and be like, yeah, these are guys that you got to start over Chris Paul here, over Poo Paul here. I think he's going to go into camp. He's going to win that job. Because again, I think he's a really highly instinctive player. I get that he's 5'11", whatever, but he's a highly instinctive player. He knows how to keep himself clean, and he's a good tackler. Like, at the end of the day, that's what you want out of a linebacker, right? So he's going to go in and he's going to win that job.
You want the hottest take of the NFL draft cycle, but it probably shouldn't be a hot take because it's just what happens.
Yeah, I would love it.
Dorian Strong will be the starter over Maxwell Harrison by week 18. And it's just because it's the Buffalo Bills, man. We saw it with Kyrie Elam. You draft the freaky athlete with all the length and all the ability. And then the dude who is just really, really good and instinctive in cover 3 in Christian Benford is the guy who's going to end up starting and getting paid. And that is Dorian Strong. It's not even the second corner that the Bills drafted. It is the third corner that the Bills drafted. I think Dorian Strong was one of my favorite players in this class because of what he did in cover 3. And I think that this is, like you with Aronde Gadsden, I just think that this is a phenomenal, phenomenal fit overall.
Yeah, I could absolutely see it. They need... If you look at all of the Buffalo Bills corners, including Maxwell Hairston, and maybe they have a type where they don't feel like they need an enforcer outside, but they don't have an enforcer, like a physical guy who can come up and hit a little bit, who can come up and press a little bit. And maybe they think that Dorian Strong can be that guy. He's definitely got the body type for it. He's got that look on film too, but like, this is a guy who can turn and burn as well in cover 3 looks. So it's not like he's just this big dude who sits at the line of scrimmage and looks to just get his hands on everybody he can. So, yeah, I like that take. I like that take a little bit. I love Maxwell Harrison's tape, though, so I'm not going to bet against Maxwell Harrison there, but I don't mind it. I don't mind that take at all.
The next take is easy. This might be the best pick in the draft, just flat out. It's Rashard Smith going to Kansas City. I'm going to let you go with this.
Well, yeah, for one, like, Isaiah Pacheco's in the last year of his contract, coming off some... like a pretty steep injury concern. Like, can he stay healthy? Plus, we're talking about a Kansas City Chiefs offense that, one, another reason we probably could have put Jalen Royals on this list too, doesn't really have a wide receiver who can win through contact consistently. And two, that means that they have to work to scheme open guys. Like, they scheme open Xavier Worthy a lot. And Rashee Rice has proved that he can, like, eat up the middle of the field and be like an underneath, not a slant merchant the same way that Mike Thomas was. But if you look at Rashee Rice's route tree, it's very much middle of the field within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage kind of body of work, and then that making stuff happen after the catch. But what makes Breshard Smith to the Chiefs so interesting is you just go back and you look at what Jerick McKinnon did, and it's almost just like, welcome back, Jerick McKinnon. I mean, there was that Super Bowl year, I think it was 2022, where Jerick McKinnon scored 9 touchdowns out of the backfield, man. Just catching passes out of the backfield, making plays in space, eating up green grass out of the backfield, and being a playmaker for Patrick Mahomes. And if you look at Isaiah Pacheco, if you look at Kareem Hunt, neither of those running backs fit that mold of that kind of playmaker in the passing game. Breshard Smith is a former wide receiver. Breshard Smith very much does. So this just feels like, welcome back, Jerick McKinnon. Get ready for a heavy workload as a rookie.
That's exactly what it feels like. And I could not agree more. I think that when you look at a perfect player to coach and quarterback fits, it just doesn't get any better than him, man. And it's really unfortunate because it feels like the Chiefs get 1 to 2 to even 3 of these picks every single year, where it's just like, oh, yeah, that guy is going to be freaking awesome for them. Like Creed Humphrey falling in their laps, Trey Smith falling in their laps. Like, it's just what happens to them.
Yeah. Yep.
The next guy.
They're just good at this.
Yeah. The next guy that we want to bring up, and this is a little bit out there, but I wanted to bring it up because the roster around him doesn't look very appetizing overall, and that is Hunter Waller. Hunter Waller, famously, if you listen to the Daft on Draft podcast, was very good at the Senior Bowl and very unlucky because he was just getting mossed the entire time. But a little bit bigger safety, listed as a linebacker on Our Lads, which I think is a little bit interesting. But
he was announced as a linebacker when he was drafted, too.
Announced as a linebacker when he was drafted. That linebacker room of Jalen Carlisle, Zaire Franklin's great, Cameron McGrone, Alubi, and Joe Bocci. Like, what are we looking at here? If Hunter Waller is able to put on 5 to 10 pounds, we've seen that a safety to linebacker hybrid with Lou Anarumo in the past. Will it work? I don't know. But for me, I look at Hunter as somebody who, he can come downhill. He can play in the box very, very well as well. But I think what I like about him most, and what I like about that position in the NFL now is, and especially with the Colts, is they've really, really put an emphasis on their linebackers being able to cover for a long time now.
Yeah.
And that's something that from day one, you can count on Hunter Waller to be in the right place at the right time in the right uniform in coverage, because of his chops as a safety.
Yeah, I agree. I've been trying to typecast him with another Lou Anarumo linebacker in Cincinnati, and I can't really find a good one to like try to dig out what would this like hybrid dime-ish kind of role look like.
AKG was different.
Yeah, very different. Logan Wilson, obviously way different as well. So like, and he's definitely not Jermaine Pratt. Jermaine Pratt's like 6'4", 230 pounds and can only battering ram downhill and as stiff as brick. But
all of those guys in Cincinnati were converted defensive backs at some point. Like Logan Wilson played defensive back in high school before going and playing linebacker at Wyoming, and he was always a really good player in coverage. And Jermaine Pratt was a 230-pound safety at NC State before becoming a linebacker at the NFL level, and AKG played a very like hybrid overhang apex role in college. So all like not true linebackers who ended up playing linebacker. And so the projection for Hunter Waller makes a lot of sense here. I just look at that safety room and that linebacker room and say, well, he can fit somewhere there and get snaps.
For sure. Yep. Completely agree. Completely agree. Again, they, I feel like they tried to make it work with some hybrid guys like that. Like, who was the cat from Nebraska that people liked a couple years ago? JoJo Doman. And like Sterling Weatherford, the Miami of Ohio guy from a couple years ago as well.
Yep.
But again, this is a different defensive coordinator now, first year with Luana Rumo. So we'll see how that plays a difference versus Gus Bradley's scheme. Yeah, but Hunter Waller is a good shot there. And then this is, I think, the last one we've got on the list here is with Washington. We're going back to the running back position. Start with the running back and with the running back. If you look at Washington's running back room, it's some big dudes with good eyes who can like make things work, like Brian Robinson. But they really lack juice. They lack top end explosiveness in that room, and they drafted Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt in the seventh round, who is loaded up with explosiveness. And so when we're talking about getting a change of pace guy in that running back room, that is Brian Robinson, whatever's left in the tank of Austin Eckler, and Jeremy McNichols. There's a real reason to believe that Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt could get a substantial amount of carries, even as a rookie here.
He reminds me a little bit of Isaiah Pacheco, like a little bit smaller dude, but like a mean runner who really has juice. Mm-hmm. He really has juice, man. And so I'm very interested in what he looks like in this offense. And then you put like just pair the explosiveness of Jaden Daniels and him on the field at the same time is pretty scary.
That's pretty fun. Yeah. Again, he's like 25 years old already. He played a lot of college football. I guess he didn't play a lot. He was in college for a long time. Didn't necessarily play a lot of college football, transferring from Alabama A&M to New Mexico.
Well, he did. He played a lot of college football until his final year.
And then they had the eligibility issues at Arizona after one game last year where they're like, wait, no, you actually don't have any eligibility left. And they're like, you can't play, which is a bizarre thing that didn't get sorted out last year.
Yeah.
But so that's a really fascinating story. But I mean, he went to the Shrine Bowl and immediately day one, people were like, who the heck is this guy?
Yeah. His day tape one is really good.
Yeah.
His New Mexico tape is really good. And then his New Mexico tape, as he was playing for Arizona in that week one game, was pretty good too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's definitely a guy to watch, even though he drafted round seven near the end of the draft, like one of the very last picks in this year's draft. He could go in there and because again, like Austin Eckler is going to have a role, but like how much is left in the tank there? And it's not very much at all. It's not very much at all. So this is a guy who could come in and he could play quite a few snaps. So we're going to round this thing out with Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt. Again, there are guys every year. Amon-Ra St. Brown, even going back to last year, Tyrone Tracy in New York. I'm sure, I'm obviously missing a ton of names here. Tariq Woolen, Brock Purdy, and we're not going to find a quarterback like that this year. I don't think.
But,
like it happens every year. These guys get out there and then they find a way to contribute. So I'm glad we knocked out this list because this is always a fun topic to talk about.
I agree. And that's it. I want to tell the people that I love them. I love this episode. This is a really fun one for me because we love these day three guys and we will be back next week.
Yep. And for all you people who haven't had your fantasy rookie drafts, here's some sleepers that you could target. There you go. All right. Well, until next week, again, we are going down to three episodes a week as we get in the off season. It'll give us a little bit more time to like watch some of these summer scouting guys before spitting opinions on them and stuff like that as well. So, and an overall time just for us to take an extra day to rest throughout the week. So we are getting into the off season of the summer here, but we will be back strong in probably late August, early September, back up to 4 days a week. And then we'll turn out another whole season just like we did. But until next time, this has been the Daft on Draft Podcast.